Well, hello again to everyone. My name is Paul Weber, and this week is International Infection Control Week. And for me and the organizers of the teleclass program, it made sense to have a very international topic, and that is what we did. We have for you today infection control in developing countries. Our speaker for this topic has a great deal of experience in developing countries. In fact, we almost didn't have the teleclass today because she was off in some remote part of the world doing what she does there for the World Health Organization. Dr. Benedetta Allegranzi is the deputy lead of the WHO First Patient Safety Challenge, which is, of course, clean care is safer care, and she does travel quite a lot. Dr. Allegranzi has many published articles. I found 25 or 30 that I could find easily, but there were two in particular that drew me to her to present this teleclass. She co-authored an article titled Religion and Culture, Potential Undercurrents Influencing Hand Hygiene Promotion in Healthcare, and another article on Hand Hygiene Initiative Aims to Decrease Healthcare-Associated Infections in Developing Countries. She was seconded to the World Health Organization from her previous employer, the University of Verona in Italy, where she was a professor of infectious disease. It is a great honor to have her with us today, and I'll let her get to it. So to present the teleclass, Infection Control in Developing Countries, from the World Health Organization in Geneva, I am pleased to present Dr. Benedetta Allegranzi. Dr. Allegranzi.
Thank you, Paul, for introducing me with such nice words. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening to the audience from all over the world. I have to say that this is really a great opportunity, and I would like to thank in particular Paul Weber, but other organizers of these teleclasses, because I think it's really a fantastic tool to spread knowledge and information throughout the world, especially in remote areas where it is not so easy to improve. We are talking about these settings, developing countries, and I would like you to go to the first slide. And this slide is not to start immediately to talk about hand transmission or hand hygiene, which will be the focus of the second part of my presentation, but just to let you know that compliance with hand hygiene is very low around the world, and I'll give you a couple of examples from developing countries. Because the awareness and the knowledge related to hand transmission is really very limited, especially because of a very simple concept, which is the fact that microorganisms are not visible, such as this. And therefore, there is a basic problem related to awareness, related to the importance of healthcare-associated pathogens and infections. If you go to the next slide, this introduces the problem of limited data related to healthcare-associated infection epidemiology worldwide. And this is indeed the focus of one of the areas of work of the first Global Patient Safety Challenge, which is indeed aimed at reducing healthcare-associated infections worldwide. If you go to the next slide, I don't want you to read this slide now because it will be presented later, but I would like you to notice that among multiple constraints to infection control in Africa reported by country representatives who convened in a workshop we organized in Uganda. Among these constraints, lack of data collection is one of the most important. If you go to the next slide, you can find the definition of healthcare-associated infections, which many of you will know. It is an infection occurring in a patient during the process of care in a hospital or other healthcare facility, which was not present or incubating at the time of admission. These kind of infections include infections that appear after discharge, and unfortunately, these kind of infections also concern healthcare staff. You can immediately understand from this definition how difficult it is to classify, to record, and report healthcare-associated infections for many reasons. The first is to establish the time cutoff in order to distinguish community-acquired infections in patients seeking care from healthcare-acquired infections. Usually, we establish 48 hours, 2 days, to distinguish the infections acquired in the healthcare settings, but this is really difficult to define, and it is also difficult to be reported. In addition, if you look at this definition, and if you go to more specific definitions of site-specific infections, like surgical site infections or hospital-acquired pneumonia or ventilator-associated pneumonia or other examples, you can understand that there is no single diagnostic test which allows identifying these infections, and this is another reason why the burden of healthcare-associated infections is not known and the importance of this problem is poorly recognized. If you go to the next slide, you can see here figures related to different important infections which are acknowledged as the major causes of morbidity and mortality worldwide. We all know these very sad figures, but we don't know what the burden of healthcare-associated infections is. And if you go to the next slide, this is partially because of the reasons I've told you, and it is reflected in the reports that are regularly issued by WHO or other major institutions as the Harvard University or others. Indeed, in the list of diseases that are considered in order to calculate mortality, incidence, disability-adjusted life years, and so on, healthcare-associated infections are not included. But if you go to the next slide, what can we estimate related to this burden worldwide? We know, and we will see later, from developed countries that we can consider an average healthcare-associated infection rate of 10%. We know that the attributable mortality ranges around 5%, and we know, different from other infections like the ones that I cited before, we know that unfortunately all countries are affected and no healthcare setting worldwide can claim to have solved this problem. And therefore, from these numbers, us here at WHO, we are attempting to calculate rough estimates of the global burden of healthcare-associated infections. But of course, from the epidemiological point of view, this is very complex. We hope to be able to do this based on the literature and based on some data related to hospital admissions or healthcare admissions, and then calculate finally at least how many affected patients per year are around the world or how many deaths occur per year around the world. If you go to the next slide, this tells you that in any case, we estimate that hundreds of millions of individuals worldwide are affected every year, and this is related to multifaceted causations, which are very specific in developing countries, we will see later. And these can be summarized in systems and processes of care provision, economic constraints on systems and countries, meaning resources available. And also, this unfortunately is attributable to human behavior, especially by healthcare workers during healthcare delivery, of course. If you go to the next slide, this re-emphasizes what I've told you until now, the fact that the data to assess the sizes and the nature of the problem, in especially in developing countries, are lacking. But there are interesting experiences in some countries, in some healthcare institutions, where it has been possible to control, to measure and control this problem. But unfortunately, some healthcare institutions are doing less good than others, and we will see how we can try to bridge this gap. So talking about epidemiological data, you are certainly aware of some figures related to developed countries, and this is the topic of my next slides. In particular, in the USA, we have plenty of information, which is regularly issued by some very relevant institutions. And this information tells us that the incidence is about 5-6%, and the number of affected patients every year is as high as almost 2 million. We know specific infection rates. We know that the most frequent infection type is urinary tract infection, but also surgical site infection is important, and many other types. And we know that in general the attributable mortality is around 4% in the U.S., corresponding to approximately 100,000 deaths, with an economic impact which is very relevant, equal to about $5 billion. I will skip the second part of this slide because we will see it later, and I would like you to go to the next, which is related to developed countries in Europe. This is a summary of the most recent studies conducted in Europe to tell you a similar message, which is the fact that the prevalence varies between 3.5 and almost 15% in these countries. Again, some countries were able to measure the mortality impact, such as the ones that you see here represented, and in particular, they were able also to measure additional length of stay and annual costs that are, in any case, very relevant. But this is not the topic of the presentation of today. If you go to the next slide, you can see that there are various consequences that are measured and appear very clear from studies in developed countries. It is clear that healthcare-associated infection increases the morbidity, prolongs the stay in a healthcare facility, in some cases determines long-term disability, excess deaths, and of course has high additional financial burden. And the most important, I think, from the patient safety side, this also has high emotional costs on patients and their families, and in some settings, especially in developing countries, this means also a financial cost, because most healthcare systems are based on patients financially to support the care they receive. So this is very important, but, and I just wanted to show these slides to summarize the fact that from developed countries we have plenty of information, especially related to some countries, and this is different indeed from developing countries if you go to the next slide. The next slide tells you what is available from the literature, from some very brilliant reviews such as the one by SID in The Lancet. So we know general information, like the fact that the risk of infection in general is considered from 2 to 20 times higher than in developed countries, and in some cases the proportion of patients infected hospital-wide can exceed 20%. Related to pediatric and neonatal infections, we know that BSI are very frequent and they are much higher than in developed countries. And in some neonatal ICUs, fatality rates may reach 50%. Again, there is a very recent literature review on ventilator-associated pneumonia telling you that incidence density is very high, as you can see here, but later we will see this information compared with developed countries. If you go to the next slide, this tells you some other figures related to other problems which are nevertheless considered associated to healthcare delivery. And very sadly, you can appreciate that nowadays in a modern world, there are still many places around the world where blood transfusion is unsafe and it causes transmission of millions of cases of hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV, as you can read in this slide. Similarly, a high proportion of hepatitis B and C new infections are caused by reused contaminated syringes, according to data in 2000, as well as 5% of new HIV infections are attributable to reuse of contaminated syringes. Another problem related to developing countries is unsafe waste disposal, and according to WHO, in 22 developing countries, the proportion of facilities using inappropriate waste disposal methods ranges from 18 to 64%. So these are general data that we can gather from the WHO website and from, as I said, from some important reviews. Go to the next slide. So this is to show you some more precise data related to developing countries because we undertook a systematic review of the literature from 1995 to 2008 here in WHO, and we are about to issue a report related to this. You can see in the next slide that according to this review covering 12 years, we only retrieved 215 papers with no language restriction. And you can see that the general picture is very scattered, meaning that there are some continents that are really not very well covered, such as Africa and Western Pacific. We don't have time now. If we would go more into details, continent by continent, you would also appreciate that in most cases in the developing world, only some countries are measuring infections and publishing reports in the scientific literature. Therefore, for instance, if we talk about Africa, most studies are from Tanzania, Nigeria. From the Americas, most are from Brazil. In European developing countries, most are from Turkey, and many other examples. From our point of view, this means that in our attempt to assess the global burden of healthcare-associated infections, starting from country data reported in the literature, we are encountering major obstacles because you can understand that if most studies come from single countries in a region, we cannot easily extrapolate estimates related to that geographic area. Anyway, if you go to the next slide, you have a table which summarizes infection rates according to the fact that they were measured hospital-wide, and there you can see that infection rates are higher, especially the prevalence ones that are the most easily measured, higher than developed countries' rates that I mentioned before. And if you go to the ICU settings, these are really much higher than in developed countries, as I said before, up to 20 times higher if you look at incidence density, which means incidence per 1,000 patient days. And if you go to the next slide, you can see that if we take data from multi-center studies from developing countries and we compare them with data from the NIST system, which is the National Surveillance Nosocomial Infection System in the US, you can see, if you go to the last three columns of this table, you can see in the first row and the second row the data from pediatric ICUs are compared. And if you look at the rates of catheter-related BSI, VAP, ventilator-associated pneumonia, and catheter-related urinary tract infections, you can see that infection rates are much higher. And this is even more the case if we compare data from adult medical surgical ICUs, which you can find in the third and fourth rows of this table. So this is quite impressive, but if you go to the next slide, according to our literature review, you can also appreciate that the most important problem is surgical site infection in developing countries. This is a graph representing the studies available on surgical site infections in a number of developing countries. And in this case, you can also appreciate the names of the countries and understand what I was meaning before when I was saying that in some cases, multiple studies have been conducted in the same country. So they are not easily representative of the entire continent. But to go back to the infection rates, you can see that there is a range between 2.6 to 3.9% of prevalence, mostly prevalence or incidence rates over 100 surgical patients. And these are figures that are enormously higher than in developed countries where the infection rates are between 1 and 3% among operated patients. So this is a very important problem. Go to the next slide. Here you see listed a number of causes. Most of them were recognized and identified by the country representatives who met in Uganda in the occasion of our workshop, and are reported in a review paper we published in the Infection Control Hospital Epidemiology in 2007. So what are these conditions? These are inadequate hygiene, of course, at different levels, lack of standard precautions, isolation, and other very important infection control measures that are quite easily applied in developed countries. And this is also depending on poor infrastructure, lack of equipment, inadequate and insufficient equipment. Then, as I was saying before, constraints to identify the infection because of lack of microbiological information. Then other very relevant constraints are understaffing and overcrowding that are all acknowledged to determine increased infection rates or especially increased transmission of healthcare-associated pathogens. In addition, infection control is poorly understood because of lack of knowledge and low staff preparedness in these settings, and I'll show you some examples later on. There is a higher incidence of antimicrobial-resistant pathogens that are much more difficult to be treated, especially in settings where the choice of antibiotics is really limited, and this is due to inappropriate use of antibiotics. In addition, some experts strongly believe that in these settings, the general population is so-called more diseased, and therefore this is considered a risk factor also for this kind of infections. Unfavorable social background also is a reason for higher burden, as well as at national level, an important problem is lack of national policies and programs. And finally, the implication of costs falling on individual patients. And this is a very specific reason because this involves the fact that many times, for instance, diagnostic tests, which would allow identifying the problem and therefore treat it, are not undertaken because the patients cannot pay. And so this contributes to the negative consequences of the occurrence of an infection in these settings. So if you go to the next slide, this summarizes the consequences. This implies unsafe, invasive procedures, nosocomial outbreaks, which are introduced in the community, and then in addition, spread of multi-resistant organisms, and as I said, higher healthcare-associated infection rates. Go to the next slide. This is to say, in very simple words, that prevention strategies reduce infections in developed in transition and also transitional and developing countries. This is evident for developed countries, but there are good studies, even if a limited number, which clearly demonstrate the effectiveness also in low-resourced settings. Most of these solutions are simple and do not require high resource investment. And as I said before, several healthcare settings have succeeded in reducing this risk to patients, but others need to improve yet. If you go to the next, this is to mention that there is clear scientific evidence to believe that simple measures that are summarized in this slide, if well applied, can prevent at least 50% of these infections. And these measures are related to important procedures such as the use and care of urinary catheters, the same for vascular access lines. This is related to optimal therapy and support of pulmonary functions in order to prevent healthcare-associated pneumonia or ventilator-associated pneumonia in particular. And also surveillance and optimal prevention of surgical procedures is part of this list of simple measures to prevent healthcare-associated infections. And above all, hand hygiene, as you know, and other standard precautions are considered the most important basic measures to prevent healthcare-associated infections. If you go to the next slide, this is to introduce you to the next topic, which is the promotion of hand hygiene and the objectives and aim of the first Global Patient Safety Challenge. You may have heard part of this through the presentation of some of our colleagues, especially Professor Pitet, who is the lead of our program. And therefore, I won't go into details, but I really want to bring you some very good examples from developing countries. Our program called Clean Care is Safer Care is aimed at reducing healthcare-associated infections, firstly, through the promotion of hand hygiene as the entrance door to safer patient care and infection control. As I said, as the most important measure, also to introduce in settings where infection control is not very popular, to introduce other measures later on. And I'll give you some examples. This is the reason why during the first 4 years of our program, which has been launched in 2005, we focused on hand hygiene. We issued the WHO guidelines on hand hygiene in healthcare, which are now final and available from our website, and summarize the knowledge, the evidence, the scientific evidence, and the expert consensus related to the importance of hand hygiene, and especially coming from the importance and the evidence of hand transmission, and several other aspects of hand hygiene promotion in healthcare, and include recommendations that were issued based on the evidence and on the opinion of more than 100 international experts. However, we consider at WHO that guidelines are completely useless if there is no implementation strategy, no evidence of their feasibility and adaptability to the real life of everyday healthcare delivery around the world. Therefore, for us, the application and the feasibility of these guidelines at the point of care, at the patient bed, is of utmost importance. And for this reason, we developed an implementation strategy for the guideline recommendations and a vast range of tools in order to implement the strategy. If you go to the next slide, you can see that our strategy is multifaceted according to the evidence and is based on five core components. The first one is system change, which means that hand hygiene must become feasible during healthcare delivery, and for this, the most important is to provide equipment and resources to practice it. Therefore, alcohol-based hand rubs at the point of care, because these are considered the most effective and best tolerated method to achieve optimal hand decontamination, as well as the provision and availability of safe and continuous water supply, soap and towels. The second element is training and education, regular training to all healthcare workers. This is very important, as especially in developing countries, knowledge is often limited. The third point, which is crucial in the context of a hand hygiene promotion campaign in a healthcare setting, is to evaluate practices, to monitor hand hygiene compliance, which means the number of times healthcare workers actually perform hand hygiene, considering the times when this is indicated according to our recommendations, but also the monitoring of other aspects like infrastructure available, as I said, the actual availability of alcohol-based hand rubs at the point of care, the availability of soap, for instance, and other indicators. Not only monitoring, but also feedback to healthcare workers about their performance in order to raise awareness related to the gaps in their practices, but also in order to let them know that they have improved following many efforts of promotion. The fourth element is reminders in the workplace, meaning posters to remind healthcare workers that they have to comply with hand hygiene at specific moments. And the fifth, very important, is that all of these elements must be embedded in this institutional safety climate, where individual and institutional participation and support are crucial, as well as, in some cases, patient participation can bring an added value to the promotion of hand hygiene. If you go to the next slide, you can see the range of tools that are available from our side and can be used and adapted in order to implement the five components of the strategy. And if you go to the next slide, you can see the five moments for hand hygiene that are now very well known. You may be among our implementers of these five moments, but the idea is that the patient in a healthcare setting, especially a hospital setting, is located in a specific zone which unfortunately becomes colonized by his own germs that often become multi-resistant. And therefore, hand hygiene must be especially practiced within this zone, and the five moments apply to specific moments during the care flow and are the very crucial moments where the risk of transmission occurs the most. So these five moments are used for education, but also for measuring adherence and for compliance. If you go to the next slide, this is just to tell you that all of those tools are very well explained in the guide to implementation, which is available to support and help the actual implementation of the five components of the strategy and the tools, and give some template action plans to healthcare settings in order to implement the strategy. If you go to the next slide, you can see that all of this has been tested in the field in different sites around the world in order to gather information about feasibility, adaptability, cost effectiveness, and therefore finalize the guidelines in their version currently available. If you go to the next slide, you can see that across all the sites, handling compliance increased significantly, more in some sites than in others. And now I would like to go into details and bring two examples related to developing countries. If you go to the next slide, you can see that one of the pilot sites was a hospital in Mali, the University Hospital Point G, where we could appreciate many infrastructure deficiencies at the baseline. You can see that the sink patient bed ratio is in this hospital 1 out 22, and in patient rooms, no sink was equipped with soap. The availability of gloves was also limited, and many other constraints really undermined hygiene practices in this hospital at the beginning. In the next slide, you can see that what are the elements of our promotion strategy. So according to the findings I've just mentioned, in particular infrastructure constraints, we considered of utmost importance the fact that alcohol-based and drugs had to be procured for this hospital and actually were not available on the market. So within the implementation toolkit by WHO, there is a guide to local production of WHO-recommended alcohol-based and drug formulations. And this hospital has been a very good example of local production by the pharmacist who is here represented in the picture at very low cost. And this cost, I can tell you, was entirely covered by the hospital budget because it was really a very, very low proportion of that budget. The next slide shows you the launch event of the campaign. When we started to promote hand hygiene, we provided alcohol-based hand rub. Education was undertaken, and then posters were displayed throughout the hospital. And of course, data related to local practices of hand hygiene were reported to the staff. And in fact, if you go to the next slide, you can see in the upper graph what was the perception at the beginning by healthcare workers related to their practices. And you can see that this was very far from the reality, meaning that most of them thought that their hand hygiene compliance ranged from 80 to 100%. Whereas in the other graph, you can see that at the baseline, the yellow bars, the overall compliance was only 8%. And it was higher in doctors than in nurses. And then you can see in the gray bars the fact that it improved significantly across the different professional categories. If you go to the next slide, you can see the compliance according to the hand hygiene indication, according to the 5 moments, and you can see that it has improved in 4 out of 5 moments, because the 5th moment related to after contact with patient surroundings hasn't improved according to the follow-up. And the improvement in the other 4 indications was significant in all cases. And in addition, you can remark that compliance with 3rd and 4th indication, which is after body fluid exposure or after patient contact and protects the healthcare worker rather than the patient, was higher, significantly higher than in the other 2 indications, which actually protect the patient. Next is related to the technique used to perform hand hygiene. And you can see in this graph that at the follow-up, alcohol-based hand rubbing has become the preferred and almost unique technique to perform hand hygiene, and therefore it helps to overcome the infrastructure constraints that I mentioned before. If you go to the next, you can appreciate that according to a knowledge test that we used before and after the education sessions, knowledge significantly improved in the most important professional categories according to a score that we attributed to the corrected answers. If you go to the next slide, I would like to bring you another example, which is a similar setting in Bangladesh, a typically developing country's hospital. Again, it was a teaching hospital where the bed occupancy was as high as 162%. And as you can see from the next slide and the picture, there as well, there was no soap at the sink stations, and sinks, there were very poor hygienic conditions, in particular at the hand washing stations. If you go to the next, again, at the baseline, before the implementation of the program, people thought that their performance was almost optimal because, again, most of them thought that their hand hygiene compliance was between 80 and 100%. If you go to the next, this tells you that answering to the question whether or not the alcohol-based hand rub availability would have improved hand hygiene practices at their institution, most of them thought that this wouldn't have been effective. The next slide shows you some elements from the campaign. They translated our posters in the local languages. The next slide related to the five moments tells you that in specific conditions where they operated with overcrowding, more than one patient in a bed, they decided to focus on two specific indications: after body fluid exposure risk and before aseptic task. This is a very interesting adaptation of our concept. And the next slide shows you that equally as in Mali was done, they produced the alcohol-based hand rub locally and the cost was really very limited and it was equal to 30 cents per 100 milliliters. If you go to the next, you can understand that senior manager's support was a key element to success in this campaign. These are the medical and the chief director of the hospital. And the next slide summarizes for you the results in terms of compliance with hand hygiene. At the baseline, the situation was so poor that they considered after a few measurements that compliance was equal to 0%. And then they measured it after the start of the campaign in two occasions, and it was as high as 48 and 64%. The next slide tells you that this campaign has had a very remarkable impact at national level because, of course, this hospital was selected by the Ministry of Health, which was very well aware of the ongoing results of the project. And even before the completion of the follow-up, the Minister of Health decided to scale up the strategy in many other settings across the country by embarking in national production of alcohol-based hand rubs, increasing the number of sinks, and also establishing a national infection control committee for the first time in the history of this country with some professionals that were trained to become experts in this field. So this is considered from our end a very important achievement. So these are two good examples, I think, of the fact that simple measures can be implemented even in low resource settings. And also another important aspect is the fact that it is a proof of the fact that the strategies that were considered effective in developed settings can actually be feasible also with limited resources, as I tried to demonstrate. So to conclude, I would like you to go to the next slide to inform you that we launched, as you may know for sure, many of you, on 5th of May, we launched a new initiative called Save Lives, Clean Your Hands, at the time when we issued the final version of our guidelines and strategies and tools. This is meant to celebrate every year an annual day focused on hand hygiene improvement in healthcare in order to promote continual sustainable best practices in hand hygiene at the point of care in all healthcare settings around the world. And if you go to the next slide, you can understand that we consider a high priority the achievement of the implementation of the 5 moments at the point of care. And we think that this can become a solid and essential basis for the promotion of other infection control measures and for making infection control a priority in healthcare everywhere around the world, and finally, ultimately, the most important, save lives. The next slide to conclude is to tell you that we have a website where you can register as a healthcare facility participating in this global movement, and where you can also download our tools. Up to now, almost 6,000 healthcare facilities joined this network. And if you go to the next slide, you can see what the website is. And in the next slide, I thanked the coordinators of our pilot sites and the team members that greatly contributed to the work I presented you, or part of the work, because there is a lot more, and you can gather information on our website, where you will know that we are now moving to also other aspects of infection control, and we will develop tools to prevent specific infection sites like surgical site infections and others. The last slides you have with you include relevant literature related to healthcare-associated infections and infection control in developing countries. And with this, I would like to thank you for listening. And later on, through emails, I'm prepared to answer to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Alagranzi. Thank you very much. And thank you for being willing to answer questions by email as well. Thank you to all of you for your attention today. And Dr. Alagranzi, thank you again very, very much for taking this time and rushing back from your trip to be able to give this presentation to us today. Thank you very much. So, folks, we will look forward to speaking with you again very soon. And have a great day. Bye-bye.